Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch brings you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's WWE Monday Night Raw.
Robert, I'm still a bit surprised at how close how much it seems WWE almost is not encouraging, but asking for an AEW chant, and then it doesn't happen. I think we got a CM Punk chant tonight, but that was in a different segment. But the way that Seth talked about Cody, I would have predicted there'd be some AEW fans chanting AEW, and it doesn't happen in WWE, and I'm sort of fascinated by that, and I think it sort of backs up that we have two pretty separate fan bases, or fans of AEW just sort of, when they go to WWE, want to just enjoy the WWE show and not bring up AEW. Because this week's Seth Cody promo felt like among the top occasions when I think the words Seth said and some of the things Cody said might have led to that. What is your interpretation of that?
I think it's some of what you said, in that the distinct audiences, at least for live events, are starting to show themselves. And I think we've been talking about this a lot post-pandemic or this phase of the pandemic, where you see this on the pay-per-views. They're no longer these hostile environments necessarily that they were 4 or 5 years ago. Part of that is, I think, the pandemic kind of reset how we consume our entertainment, and there's, you know, certain priorities on things that we do, and people seem less willing to go pay a lot of money to go watch something they intentionally don't like. So I think that has changed a little bit. And then, as you said, the distinct audiences, there's somewhere else to go now. Not a perfect promotion by any stretch of the imagination, but you can go and do that and air those grievances. We are no longer, as a wrestling watching public, held hostage essentially by one company. And I think you see that a lot, even tonight, where you would think it would definitely happen. AEW was the babyface, framed as a babyface in the storyline tonight, and it did result in one of those hostile crowds.
Yeah. I think you're right. I mean, I think the hostility is gone. An option is there. So if you're at a WWE show, don't protest, don't hate watch. Just, if you're going to go, and if WWE is delivering to you what you've been watching on TV and the expected experience, why boo? You have this AEW, relatively big budget, large profile, major cable channel option. And so, yeah, but that said, I was, like, for people who didn't see the show, Seth said, you left WWE 6 years ago because you weren't good enough. And then every single day that you were gone, you and your little friends tried to tear down what I was building here. And then he said the prodigal son returned to fulfill his family legacy, but not on my watch, pal. So, I mean, it's not like, you know, it wasn't super overt and he didn't go on and on about it. But like, if the line of you and your little friends tried to tear down what I was building here, and Seth is representing WWE, you're positioning fans to cheer that Cody created this other company with his little friends and chant and cheer that because Seth is the heel, even if he's representing WWE. So I think WWE has realized, and Cody and Seth have realized, that there's not a lot of people who are proud AEW fans who are going into, quote, enemy territory and being disruptive. I think people who are fans of both companies don't want to be disruptive or don't want to, you know, sort of be rude guests, even if they're paying customers. And those who aren't fans of WWE just aren't at the, you know, who would be otherwise be chanting AEW, just aren't even going to the shows. I don't think Cody brought a ton of anti-WWE, pro-AEW people with him. I'm sure there's some people who watch Raw who weren't before because they like Cody, but they're not hate watching Raw just to see Cody. They're okay with what WWE is doing. So this was that stood out to me as one of the more noteworthy happenings on this Memorial Day holiday edition of the show. I thought it was a good promo from Cody and Seth to set up that match. I thought they laid out, you know, the motivations for both. And yes, I mean, we've had Cody win two already, so it's a bit of a tough sell to say, you know, well, now see if you're, you know, your the fan favorite Cody can make it three in a row, or else he's going to be 2-1, and you're supposed to feel bad about that, or you're going to feel bad about it even though we won 2 out of 3. Just sort of on the face of it, it's tough. But I thought Cody delivered on the microphone, and I thought Seth, you know, for better or for worse within his polarizing character, did a good job selling the match. And that line, he will not change Cody, he will end him, and then we can all wake up from this American nightmare. I thought it worked. What are your thoughts, Robert, on the segment itself?
Yeah, I really thought it was a home run segment, which you don't always see on these holiday Raws where there kind of can be extended house shows, but this time it also fell into being a go home show, so they had to button up a little bit, and I really enjoyed it. It was basically Seth, a little bit of this current character, as you're saying, but kind of the guy he was on Twitter in like 2020. It was basically that guy, and I think that worked. Like again, it's not going so meta that if you're only watching the TV shows that you have no idea what's going on, but it's just enough of like, yeah, you were the company man during all of that, during the layoffs, during all of that stuff. So you and all the anti-AEW stuff, all that, the things you said about Moxie, it all came together there. And you had Cody, I thought, not being with the pandering side that Seth did address in his promo. So it was kind of cool that they put that out there. I think this is sort of that line of work shoot, whatever the hell that actually means in 2022. This is the good version of that where it's not undermining the whole rest of everything else you're watching. So I thought this was really good. The crowd, if we can trust the reaction, was really into the promo and the pull apart after. So I think this has been the best program I would say they've had going on balance in the company probably over the last month with respect to the tag team stuff as well. But I think they really nailed it in what should be the last time we see these guys interacting on TV for a while.
We'll get a little ahead here and talk about what you expect on Sunday between Cody and Seth. Based on what you pluck from this exchange tonight, this promo, did it give you any more of an inclination of how they're going to presumably conclude this feud? Does Cody just win and we move on, or is there a transition to the next feud or what?
I think you got to just smash Cody over. I really think if you're going to put someone three pay-per-views in a row where the heel has lost twice already, you only do that in a situation like this to make it definitive. I know WWE likes to mess around with keeping everyone even, but I don't get the sense that that's where they are going here. And I know we had a couple years where Hell in a Cell matches didn't necessarily have definitive finishes, but in theory, this is the setting to have a definitive finish to a feud or match. I really don't think we get any interference. I could be really wrong with that. I'm not very confident saying that, but I think this is the definitive Cody conquers Seth once and for all, does it in very distinct fashion. You know, it was kind of tainted at the last pay-per-view. This is it. He stands tall, top of the cell. And then we move on to the night after Raw to see what direction they go in from there to Money in the Bank.
Yeah. Yep. I don't have a strong feeling either, other than I think Cody's going to win, because I think they have big things planned for Cody, and I think they think Seth can talk his way back into fans caring about whatever he's going to do next. But I am curious if just a clean win and Seth moves on. I mean, in a way, it's the right thing to do, but in a way, it feels weird to let the – I know they're saying he's a prodigal son returning home, but he's also the AEW co-founder and former EVP who's beating a guy who, as you said, Robert, sort of represented WWE on Twitter. In as much as any of that matters, you know, maybe it doesn't, but you would think the history of pro wrestling is such where usually the promoter wants their guy to beat the wrestler from the other company if there's any sort of hint of it being a promotion versus promotion type situation. And that I don't think is going to happen here. I think Vince has taken possession and ownership of Cody and is seeing him as his guy and also an essential big star, a piece on the chessboard that Vince needs. And having Seth lose three times to him is one of the ways to elevate him to a level where he can, you know, more believably to the fan base, put him in a top spot. Because, you know, Cody's really good on the mic. He's really good in the ring. He looks good in a suit, but he's not like Brock Lesnar, you know, and I don't even think he's as talented at oozing top guy star power as Roman Reigns right now. I don't think he's far off. I don't think there's a ton better than Cody in that regard, but, you know, it's not just obvious that he's going to be at their level. So I think it takes some booking finesse to present to fans the notion that Vince McMahon hopes they'll buy into, which is Cody's a guy who you should believe and be interested in whoever he's feuding against at any level, including our very top guys.
Right, and we should add, too, with the context of this weekend, I think it's very clear, and it should have again, that they have vested interest in Cody succeeding, whether it's for nefarious reasons or not. I think that is a plan that they are at least sticking to right now. There's a few things on the show, this and Austin Theory, and obviously what they've done for a couple of years with Roman Reigns. There's a few cases where they're kind of sticking with guys, and they're not, you know, turning them into this this level playing field, which is somewhat refreshing to see.
Yeah, any of the big stars, MJF certainly, you know, the most prominent name in the news this weekend. If they're looking at how Cody's being treated, they're gonna come away going, okay, I got a fair shot over there. You know, they're not playing the game of bury the ex-AEW guy. If you've got talent, they're gonna push you. Now, Cody was their guy. WWE has sort of taken ownership of the legend of Dusty Rhodes and him being the coach in NXT, and so WWE certainly has more with him. More history with Cody, where they would see him as their guy who just strayed for a little while. Whereas, let's say MJF, for example, if you know, they signed him, and whether it's in 18 months or Tony gives MJF his release or MJF has some leverage we don't know about to get his release, and they don't come to terms or haven't already come to terms, you know, I'm not ruling out they, although it would be a weird strategy given how bad some people look here, if they came to some sort of agreement along the way leading into this weekend to propel this as a shoot, to make it look like a shoot when they're actually on the same page, perhaps begrudgingly, whatever's going on there. If that's not the case, and MJF becomes a free agent and goes to WWE, he's not going to have the history of WWE that Cody does, but MJF is a WWE fan. He grew up a WWE fan. And I think he has to look at WWE looking at Cody going, we need a commodity as talented as Cody, and we're going to push him regardless of what he did to try to compete with us. Heck, Jeff Jarrett just got a job as a VP of live events, and he started a company to go against WWE. Eric Bischoff has had so many opportunities in WWE on air and off air to be involved, despite bringing Vince McMahon to his knees and the whole WWF to their knees in the Monday Night War era. So in that sense, Vince doesn't hold a grudge, and he sometimes, I think, respects people who go at him. Maybe MJF's missing some of that, and it would actually, in an ironic way, work against MJF. Maybe MJF needs to go start a competing company before he can be assured he'll be treated like Cody. But I don't mean to talk myself
that
off
would be
point.
That would be a plot twist to everything.
Oh, that would. That'd be great. I don't want to talk myself out of the point that is a predominant point, which is I think they would use MJF well. I think they'd use anybody from AEW that they decided to pay big money for or acquire well, because WWE needs talent and they're making a ton of money and they got to have bodies who can work for them every week, because when you get to a certain age and a certain level of pay and leverage, you don't want to work every week, as evidenced with Reigns getting a lighter schedule and Brock Lesnar and at times Ronda Rousey and others. So anyway, let's pause. Let's not get too far off the raw track here and introduce the show, give out the phone number and email so we can include other voices in this. We also will have an on-site correspondent who, as of this moment, is watching Seth and Cody wrestle in a dark match in Little Rock, Arkansas. And we'll bring Kevin on to talk about his in-person experience in just a few minutes, too. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show for Monday, May 30th, 2022. And I am Wade Keller, the editor, publisher, and founder of the Pro Wrestling Torch weekly newsletter. For over three decades, covering professional wrestling with an insider's perspective, breaking news, analyzing not just what's happening, but why it's happening, and also mixing in hard-hitting editorials, newsmaking, and historically significant long-form Torch Talk interviews with some of pro wrestling's biggest names. All of that I just spoke of is available in our library, our online VIP backlog library of podcasts, retro radio shows from the 90s, hundreds of them, and well over 1,500 back issues of the Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter dating back to the late 1980s. And real quick, our first sale of 2022 just started a few days ago, and you can get $8 off a VIP membership by going to pwtorch.com/govip. Click on the sign-up form link, and in the coupon code box, enter SALE22, and that will apply an $8 discount to whatever VIP membership you sign up for. That brings a one-month sub. Normally $9.99, brings it down to $1.99 for a full month of VIP access. You can dive into our full archives and then experience everything that we did last night or all weekend covering AEW. I published a 1,600 plus word exclusive news story and a perspective piece on the MJF AEW situation. That was VIP exclusive. You can read that. Also hear my hotline covering some of the same topics on Sunday with some updates. And then also our longer than 90-minute post-AEW Double or Nothing pay-per-view roundtable. Todd Martin and Rich Van joined me. We spent a lot of time getting Rich and Todd's take on the MJF situation and kind of playing out different scenarios based on what we know and what we don't know, what might be true at face value and what might not be. And we talked at length about not only the MJF Wardlow match and the ramifications and what we took from that, but also everything else going on this weekend in that controversial MJF AEW situation, plus full analysis of CM Punk's AEW World title win and everything else on that show. We'll do the same thing this coming Sunday with our post-pay-per-view roundtable. I'll be hosting that after Hell in a Cell. We've been doing post-pay-per-view roundtable since 2003, and when you go VIP, you can listen to any of them. Every WWE pay-per-view, we've done a post-show roundtable. Same thing for AEW and many other wrestling companies over the now nearly 20 years we've been doing post-pay-per-view podcasts. So go VIP, check out what we're doing. Come on back if you want to wait for a while for any reason, or check it out for the first time. The coupon code is SALE22. Enter that coupon code and get $8 off a one-month, three-month, or one-year VIP subscription. And that also includes ad-free versions of all of our free podcasts, plus a ton of VIP exclusive podcasts throughout the week and ad-free access and a VIP website that is ad-free also with all the same content as pwtorch.com without ads, plus bonus VIP exclusive articles and other content. pwtorch.com/govip, coupon code SALE22. The other voice you've heard so far on this show is Robert Vijhos. He is the host of MMA Talk for Pro Wrestling Fans, part of the PW Torch Daily Cast lineup. Robert, it's great to have you back. Welcome.
Great to be back, Wade. It was a fun weekend of wrestling and had to kind of turn the mind back to WWE tonight, which was a little bit of an adjustment, but I'm glad to be on.
Yeah. I mean, it's, for so long, you know, there weren't two major companies. There were more than one company, but you sometimes would find yourself shifting from TakeOver to, you know, Raw SmackDown storylines, or you'd shift from ROH putting on one of their bigger shows. Impact Wrestling, you know, to differing degrees, having shows that were newsworthy. New Japan, you know, whatever. But this is at a higher level. And you do really immerse yourself for such a weekend, such an important weekend, a newsworthy weekend, and really a week leading up to it, going back to Dynamite. Then all of a sudden it's Monday, and you're like, oh, that's right. There's another pay-per-view coming up less than a week away now, and a Memorial Day edition of Raw with a lot of things going on. So we are here to talk about that. But you can hear Robert's show every week for free, or you can get the ad-free version with your VIP membership on our VIP podcast feed. Robert, tell people a little bit about what you and Rick do on your show.
Sure. So the name of the show, as mentioned, MMA Talk for Pro Wrestling Fans. And what we do is exactly what we say. It's mostly an MMA podcast, but we try to keep it light, try to keep it more based on what a casual fan of MMA, in particular a wrestling fan of MMA, would like to hear. We break it down the way we do a podcast like the one Wade and I are doing right now. We talk about the aesthetics. We talk about the business side of things, who should or who shouldn't get pushed, the TV presentation, the announcers, all that stuff. And we do talk about the action bell to bell as well. And then we usually dedicate the last little portion of our show to a little bit of wrestling talk. This week, if you go and check out the show, a bit of an atypical show, just given what happened over the weekend without a UFC show or a major Bellator show to break down and such a big weekend of wrestling. We pretty much focused on pro wrestling for this week's show, but, you know, coming into next week, it'll be back to regularly scheduled programming where we talk the news and notes of MMA and sprinkle in a little pro wrestling, boxing, and pop culture there at the end.
Very cool. So to subscribe to that, just search PW Torch in your podcast app, PW Torch, and you'll see the Daily Cast lineup, different show on with a different theme every day of the week. All right, let's give out the phone numbers and the email. If you want to give us a call here on our Raw post show, the number is 347-215-8558. That's 347-215-8558. When you call, push 1 on your keypad. That will let us know that you want to be on the show. You can also email us at wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. That's wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. All right, so I noted that we have an on-site correspondent joining us. Let's get to Kevin Catani now. He just watched, I believe, Seth Rollins battle Cody. Kevin, welcome to the show.
Thank you so, so much. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, we sure can.
Okay, awesome. Yeah, I'm in a rental car with a Bluetooth and don't really know how it works, so I'm making sure you guys can hear me. All right.
Yeah, you're doing good. Let's start. How did the dark match go with Seth and Cody?
It went really well. I think as to be expected with Seth being back in the state of Iowa, there were a lot of pockets of the crowd that were trying to get welcome home chants and Seth chants, and we were sitting next to a pocket of those kids. But at the end of the day, every time that Cody hit a big move, the crowd cheered, and when he did get the win after hitting three crossroads in a row, the crowd did pop, and we took off right at the end of the match just to kind of beat the crowd out. But he stayed in the ring for quite a bit, you know, waving and all that, and they played his music through the whole time. So,
how was the match? Like, what kind of? I mean, we know what they can do in the ring, but what kind of effort did they put forth without the cameras rolling live on a pay-per-view TV?
Sure, I thought they gave really good effort. I was trying to watch it with the eye of, are they trying to, like, try any spots for the Hell in the Cell match? And everything looked,
right.
some of the biggest moves came off the ropes. And so I know that that's not always the easiest to do with the structure around them. But no, I thought they gave a really good effort. Like I said, I think the few times that I've been lucky to see Seth in the state of Iowa at various events, he really seems to get a little more energy knowing that some of the guys from his wrestling school are in attendance, and he just seems to always have a good energy. So I actually really liked it. I thought they both got a good amount of offense. Seth carried a lot of it through the early part of the match. And then kind of after he got through some of his shenanigans, then Cody kind of took control and three crossroads later and the match was over.
Who got the biggest cheers of the night among all the wrestlers? Was it hometown boy Seth in this context? Was it Cody as one of the biggest stars? Was it Riddle fresh off of RK-Bro? Was it Bobby Lashley? Was it Becky who sometimes gets the biggest pop? Or Bianca Belair? A lot to choose from. Or anyone else I didn't mention?
Well, I was going to say the one that you didn't mention that you're going to perhaps laugh when I say it. And I'm sure some of this is sprinkled with the idea that the show was just getting started. But R-Truth was the first main event match of the night, and I think he got the loudest pop of anybody. And so that was a really kind of cool because I feel like it's always cool to see those guys who have been around a while. And I would say he got the biggest pop, even though the actual cameras weren't rolling. But once the show proper got started, I would say that Ray and Dominic got a really good reaction. KO got a really good, like, positive reaction, even though he was a bad guy. And I think then, towards the end of the night, the crowd loves Riddle. And there was even at least one or two Randy chants that were going as Riddle was kind of making comebacks here and there. I think those were the biggest ones. And then most of the superstars got their superstar reactions, but I was really blown away at how much the crowd popped for R-Truth.
Yeah, being first out is an advantage for sure if you want to come across as popular. Was there a CM Punk chant at one point in the night or more than one point in the night?
There was a CM Punk chant, and it came, let me see, I made notes. And it was during an extended, it was during the Theory Mustafa Ali match. And I imagine what we were watching was during a commercial break, because then it wasn't until they kind of got reset and ring the bell that I think we came back. I don't know. Were you able to hear that, or did somebody report that to you?
No, we could hear it. And it actually sounded like they turned the crowd volume down when the chant broke out, and it was when the ref was checking if Ali wanted to agree to fight after the beatdown. And that part actually was audible on the show. Robert, did you pick up on it? Was it prominent enough that it was pretty obvious to you too?
Not as much as I think you did. So I think I could have just been me not paying attention, though. So I wouldn't be talking to that. Yeah.
Or my soundbar tuned in to pick up the crowd more.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and during that whole segment that wasn't quite the match, Theory also was getting a lot of boos. And not like you're a bad guy boos, like go home boos, which I thought was interesting. Hmm. And then at the culmination of the boos came the CM Punk chant.
Huh. Interesting. I wonder why he'd be getting that kind of reaction. I have to process that a little bit. Okay. Robert, why don't you jump in if you have any questions?
Sure. So on television, it was really noticeable about the time between when Liv Morgan and Rhea Ripley came out for the match and to the time the match started. I think someone clocked it at about 20 minutes.
I bet at 19.
Oh, 19. Okay. Yeah. Well, we need to get that straight for posterity. my question would just be, you know, what was the reaction to the two women? What was their crowd interaction during that time? Was the crowd watching the video package that had the Memorial Day tribute on for part of it? Kind of what was the vibe going on in that moment?
Did she play who's the ring announcer for Raw? Did she play anybody like in a game of checkers or chess or something during that 20 minutes?
Yeah, no, actually, they were showing a lot of WrestleMania highlight video packages for some reason, and it just kind of seemed out of place, and so several of those played, but then the Memorial Day video package did play, and everyone sort of stopped what they were doing to watch that, but actually during all of the downtime, and there seemed to be four or five key introductions that then immediately went to commercial break, and in the cases where it was a baby face, they got out of the ring and like slapped hands with a few people, you know, some of the kids in the front row. In the case of Rhea, she just went and sat in the corner.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, that's just, can you imagine being a wrestler and you're being told, your time to head to the ring, but the bell won't ring for.
I think Wade might have muted himself, or he dropped off the line here. Can you still hear me? Can you still hear me?
Yeah, I can still hear you, Robert.
Okay, well, hopefully Wade will
in the ring
reestablish. There he is.
Yeah,
oh, there he is.
To make it seem like anything that's not happening in the ring is just happening while something is about to happen in the ring. Of that.
Yeah, and I don't know how it is at other venues, but like
what they've decided
how to take
viewers, but from a live experience, it feels awkward.
Yeah, and they brought the ring lights all down during those commercial breaks, so it was even kind of hard to see. And the venue we were in, the Wells Fargo Arena, is not a big venue, but when they kill those lights, it's tough to kind of see. But we were able to make out that the good guys kind of did some good guy things to kill time, and the bad guys just sat or stood or just kind of made fun, like kind of bantered with the announce table, just in sort of a very casual way.
Jump rope, just get your cardio in shape and then not have to do it later or the next morning with all that time. Anyway, point made. Robert, anything else you want to bring up?
You mentioned a little bit about the reaction to Riddle. Was he getting a pop with the match and the promo, or was it just related to the time and the action out there in the ring?
I would say that both he and Shinsuke got a good pop in the backstage segment, but the second he came rolling out on that scooter, the crowd went nuts, and he was able to give a few high fives as he wheeled down to the crowd, but I think in general, the crowd here anyway was very pro Riddle, and every comeback he made, or when he was the one making the hot tag, like they just really, really were behind him. I think I said at the beginning too, there were a few Randy chants, which a couple kind of led him to pardon the term, Hulk up, and in other cases it was just something that he got started. And so, yeah, Des Moines was very much into to Riddle, and we were pretty much eating out of his hands for his crowd interactions and then his match skills. So,
how full was the arena tonight? It was hard to tell with the camera angles. You know, obviously they block off a bunch of the arena because of the staging. That's true in every every week, but in terms of the available seats, lower deck, upper deck, was a bunch tarped off? Were there a bunch of empty seats? What percentage was full, not counting the staging?
Sure. So not counting the staging, the entire – it's only a two-level venue with the suites kind of in the middle, and they had the entire second level tarped off. And of the main level that was not staging, I would say probably 85, 87% full. I saw a few pockets of empty seats, but, like, everything on the hard cam side, and that's the side that we were sitting on, was full. Everything that was sort of directly opposite the stage was full. And so it was kind of anything opposite the hard cam where the pockets of seats were.
And, I mean, it's Little Rock, Arkansas. It's a major arena. This isn't a B-level or old building. It's full to, like, 17,000 people, right?
Oh, did you mean Des Moines?
Oh, God, I did. Yeah, never mind. what's the capacity of the building? That's my fault. Yep.
Yeah, no, you're fine.
I did mean Des Moines.
Geez, not only does WWE not give us respect, but Wade calls us Little Rock. I love it.
I know. I was thinking, I was Friday night, and I apologize.
No, you're
we're
okay.
Right above Iowa. Although really, Minnesotans would be proud of me because, you know, we do make a lot of Iowa jokes with our football rivalry, our college football rivalry.
Well, you listen, and I'm sure that many of them are warranted, so keep them coming. but, yeah, so I would say that the total, because we have a G League team, an AHL team, and an indoor football league team that play in the Wells Fargo Arena, I would say it's probably a 12 to 15,000 probably, but probably closer to the 12,000 side. It's a pretty decent size arena.
In fact, my Minnesota Wild hockey team, their minor league affiliate with some good players coming up next year, are based out of Iowa. So we're more friends than we used to be.
Well, let me know if you make a trip down this way, we'll go to a game.
Oh, that'd be great. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I've been down there for some wrestling, conventions, but, haven't been down there. I don't know if I've gone just for a wrestling show or any other event. I had some family that lived down there for a little bit. But anyway, what was your overall impression of the show? Just as a fan in the building, for, you know, 3.5 hours, was it a really good experience? Did it seem like a down week for WWE? How did it compare to your expectations?
Sure, yeah. Well, actually, this is my very first Raw. My brother and I and my father, we've traveled to several pay-per-views. We've gone to several NXT pay-per-views and then just all the live shows that come through Iowa. But I was really excited because this was our first Raw. And I commented to several folks on Twitter and a few folks in our text groups that I actually thought tonight was a pretty solid show. A couple of the matches in the middle had the interference, which I guess it would be high time before WWE does an entire show without some sort of interference, but I was actually really impressed. The crowd reacted very well to all of the segments. I thought that the quietest that they were was during the Theory Ciampa Mustafa Ali stuff, but otherwise, like I said, I think the video packages gave people enough time to use the potty, get food, do whatever. But when there was live camera on, I thought that I know the three of us had a really good time. And I thought, show-wise, I thought it certainly delivered as a go-home show in every aspect. And except I did say that I thought it was a bad state to have your go-home pay-per-view show where you want Seth to be the bad guy because it is his home state. But even then, like I said, all that Cody and Seth stuff was just so hot. And Seth came down the section that we were sitting in, those stairs. So that was really cool. I thought it was actually a really good go-home show.
I know you got a Seth Cody match afterwards. So from a fan experience standpoint, that's a very good main event at this point. But were fans into the Omos MVP Lashley segment?
They were as it built. I think initially my brother leaned over to me at one point and went, oh, so this is going to be just a straightforward contract signing, huh? And then once we kind of realized that it was building towards something, especially once the table came out, a lot of people started kind of standing up because we knew somebody was going through the table. And then, of course, when Omos got speared into the table, the crowd went nuts. So I think what started off as maybe kind of a quiet contract signing really sort of escalated as it became more apparent that somebody was going to get put through a table.
Cool. Robert, is there anything else you want to ask about of Kevin about tonight?
Just really quickly on we haven't talked about much on the women's side of things. Where were we this week on Becky Lynch? Was she getting full heel heat out there? Was there cheers for her? Where did she kind of fall?
Yeah, she got a really good – because she kicked off the show proper and got a great – I forget the gentleman's name who is sort of the ring announcer, but he gave that, 10 seconds till we're live. And so then the crowd all stands up and starts getting real amped. And then Becky's music hit, and the crowd did go crazy for her. And then during the Asuka-Bianca match, there were several Becky chants. And I think for sure when there was one, they put the camera on her because I could see that she was sort of posturing in her chair. And while I know that she can be expressive sort of normally, it did kind of look like I know the camera's in my face posturing. But the crowd did give several good Becky chants, and I think she responded in kind. And then, of course, as soon as the match was over, she got in to get some of her heat back before she escaped out the back. So,
Cool. Is there anything else you want to share with us? Anything that happened off air or any other observations, crowd chants, something from the concourse that was interesting that we've been asked you about?
Yeah, sure. Just a final few couple notes for you. I made in my notes that Cody's entrance, and while I know it's the most flamboyant of all of them, it is so cool to see in person. And
yeah.
The pyro that's attached to it and just his presence, like, he certainly is something. And I know that there's been mixed reviews on whether or not he's fully sort of getting into the groove here. The crowd here was very much behind him, and that entrance just, you can't stop and feel but awe as that the pyro hits and the smoke fills the room. I thought that was really cool. I thought Alexa was well received. I keep hoping that they'll build her to get her back into the title scene at some point because she did get some good reactions from the crowd. I have to say it's a guilty pleasure of mine, and I know that different contributors of yours are pro and con with it, but all the 24/7 stuff that happened in the middle of Miz TV was so entertaining, and it just, to me, it was enough. They didn't drag it on too much. Everybody kind of got their 24/7 high spot, and there were two title changes in one session, so what's better than that? So I thought they worked that in really well. I did notice that kind of once it was apparent that the Miz TV section was over, Miz got out of the ring and was already up the ramp before a lot of the 24/7 stuff even started. So I don't know if he didn't need to be there, so he got out or what, but the Street Profits took a seat in the director's chairs and he got the heck out of Dodge. So
interesting. Yeah. As far as Cody goes, it does seem like they are looking for more enthusiastic, loud Cody chants, with Seth overtly saying, I'm tired of hearing these Cody chants. And when they do that, I'm looking for just a visual and the audible, loud, the whole arena is like just to spite Seth chanting Cody, Cody. And to me, it feels more scattered and fleeting. It's not that Cody's not popular, but I don't think the intensity of his popularity is coming across as like super intense right now. I feel like we like you, but we're not going to expend a ton of energy just despite Seth chanting your name yet. Is that fair? And what was your experience like in the building? Do I frame it in a way that matches your experience?
Yes. And I think it was shaded even more so because we were in Iowa, because I even sort of made a note as the match was going on that, despite all of Seth's trying to heel on the crowd and sort of beg those chants out, there was, especially in the stairway that he came down, there was a lot of cheering at the comments he was making. And then, of course, I even leaned over to my brother at one point because certainly several of his comments as he came down the stairs were AEW tinted. And I think it was just kind of funny because A, Seth's back home in Iowa. B, the WWE loyalists are going to be anti-AEW no matter what. And so the way that promo went, he got a lot of people kind of on his side inadvertently because of what he was saying and where he was. And so I think that tonight's reaction would very much match how he's been doing it. And I would be very interested to see when Raw makes sort of their deep South swing in through like Alabama and Georgia and North Carolina, South Carolina, I wonder if we'll see more Cody uptick then, because that's kind of his and his dad's old stomping grounds. But yeah, tonight was just kind of even more weird because of the hometown advantage that Seth came in with.
All right, cool. Anything else you want to add, Kevin?
No, I just am very appreciative to be a part of this. Like I said, it was fun to take some notes as we were going. Oh, the other thing I'll finish with was during the Liv Rhea match, both AJ, who was the only one to get a music interference spot, and Finn got huge crowd save pops as they came in. And then I don't know if it was on TV or not, but all three of the good guys got their signature moves on the bad guys on the way out of the ring. And so that really sort of got the crowd going. And I would imagine because then the next thing was the contract signing. And so I think they timed that out really well and placed that particular match really well because the after-match activity really got the crowd going.
That's interesting. Cool. Kevin, I appreciate you taking time to talk to us after the show. It's cool talking to you, I was going to say in person, but, you know, talking to you voice-wise and not just on Twitter.
Yeah, thank you guys so much. Have a great rest of your show, and certainly any other time they come back to the Midwest, I'd be happy to help.
Great. Let us know. That applies to you and everybody attending live shows. That's Kevin Catani, our on-site correspondent on tonight's Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. If you want to be an on-site correspondent, you can email me, wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. Just put the date and the name of the city in the subject line and let us know that you want to be an on-site correspondent, and I'll be in touch and just confirm things with you, and then you can call us up and do what Kevin just did. Tell us about what your experience was like. So speaking of our phone number, you can call us right now if you're live streaming our show at wadekellerpostshow.com. The number is 347-215-8558. When you call, push 1 on your keypad. That'll flag you on our switchboard so we know that you want to be on the program. We'll be by Wednesday and Friday this week with Dynamite and SmackDown live post shows. So join us at wadekellerpostshow.com for those. You can find a direct link to our live stream in my TV reports every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday night at pwtorch.com. And you can also find a link on our Twitter page at pwtorch. And you can click on that link and stream the show on your phone or your laptop or your desktop. You can also just call in and listen on the phone number we give out. All right, let's get two calls and emails. And we'll start with William in San Diego. William, thank you for calling. Thank you for holding. How's it going tonight?
Pretty good. How are you guys doing?
Good. Good to hear from you again.
Yeah. Wanted to talk about the final segment and that Amaz, Lashley, MVP handicap match they have planned for Sunday. I hadn't seen I don't know if it was Raw Talk or a Twitter thing or whatever where they had announced the stipulation that it was going to be a handicap match, but that kind of, not that I was like super looking forward to the match, but I don't know, it just kind of brings down the my level of excitement for it going into it. I'm just kind of imagining like 5 or 6 minutes of MVP and Amaz like getting down Lashley, and then finally like a hope spot or something. You know, the typical formulaic stuff that WWE sometimes tends to over rely on. And I don't know. I'm not really looking much forward to that match. Did this final segment do anything for you guys? Are you looking forward to it? What do you guys think?
I mean, it was. I liked MVP's passion. And I thought Lashley had a better week than last week. But, you know, I mean, MVP and Omos being a two-on-one match, Robert, they're doing that because they want the match to be decent, and Omos is still limited in what he can do. So when you add MVP to the match, storyline-wise, it seems like it's a disadvantage for Lashley, although MVP's sort of the designated jobber, you know, like what J.J. Dillon was to the Four Horsemen back in the day, or Paul Ellering when he would team with the Road Warriors in six-man matches. You knew who was going to lose. So that's fine. But it'll make the match better. I did sort of lose track of when that announcement was made. They just – Monday, the MVP and Omos, when they had got to make the call on what the stip would be, and then by Friday on SmackDown, they just acted like everybody knew it was a two-on-one match and that there would be a contract signing. I think they got less out of that than they could have, but maybe they felt like two-on-one isn't anything worthy of making a big deal out of. What do you think, Robert?
Yeah, that was going to be my point there. I'm sure there's a historical counterexample to this, but – handicap matches are never really a selling point. I feel like they're, when they're used the best, they're more of a TV gimmick to get over some, you know, monster face in some way. So it's not something I think if you announce it, you know, it's going to be a handicap match. That doesn't quite have the same gravitas as at one time announcing it's going to be a Hell in a Cell or War Games or anything like that. So I think that was the idea there. This all felt like just kind of filler, and not to say that the segment was really, really bad. But it was just the way the commercial break timed out. They had just a couple of minutes. You knew it wouldn't be very long. You've talked about this before, that as the third hour progresses, there seems to be almost a decline in importance of what we're seeing on the show. And I think this is kind of the textbook example of that.
All right. William, back to you. What else do you got?
It kind of came up a couple of times with your on-site correspondent, but I want to talk about Theory, Mustafa Ali segment or match that was preceded by the whole Mustafa Ciampa match. What do you guys think of that whole thing? Just, you know, the DQ finish, I think they kind of overdid it tonight with the DQ finishes. there were like three or four. And so that was kind of a, you know, groan-inducing moment with the DQ finish there, and but also just Theory beating up Mustafa, even though it was unfair in an unfair situation, we did get that, you know, visual of Theory pinning Mustafa, and now we're going to have a rematch at Hell in a Cell, and I just don't feel like Mustafa has ever gotten the upper hand during this whole feud with Miz and Ciampa and Theory. So I don't like really have any like or hope or anything that Mustafa is like going to capture the title or take it from Theory. So it just feels like,
right.
I don't know. I'm not really like too interested in it.
I know what you're. I was excited about Mustafa Ali getting a push, and because he can have really good matches, and you know, I think the highest end for him of benefiting from this push would have been sort of take you by surprise because of the fan support, Daniel Bryan, you know, circa 7 years ago, whatever it was, type thing. And I don't sense that's happening. I think he connects with fans. I think he's earnest and likable and really good in the ring. But there's something about the way that he's being booked that doesn't – it feels like he's just sort of there as a transition for Theory to step past, to move past. Robert, what's your take on the potential of this and how it's being fulfilled?
Yeah, I think with Ali as a whole, the criticism that I've had is it's a guy that looks like he's just trying way too hard out there since the comeback, and I don't think it's worked. And I think in this scenario, there's clearly he is outsized as far as focus goes or potential future. And I think the crowd can sense that you know, if we're gonna invest in either of the guys that we're seeing on this show, it's going to be Theory and not Ali, because it doesn't seem like there's much for him in the long term. Ciampa's been kind of this side character. This is one of those things that I think, as is the case with a lot of this show, the pay-per-view on Sunday. Like, yeah, it's time to move on and move over with this. I think we're pretty clear now that there's going to be nothing on the horizon for Ali going forward. If anything, this will might be the peak of it working with Austin Theory.
All right. William, back to you.
Yeah, I don't know how much this plays into it because, you know, it's kind of hard to get a read on the crowds nowadays. Like, how much do they care about outside stuff? How much are they just kind of in the WWE bubble? Like, you guys talked about, you know, a lot of the fan base that's left just being, you know, WWE fans and not really caring much about stuff like the AEW or other outside wrestling stuff. But yeah. Do you think that maybe the whole, you know, him publicly asking for his release, do you think that maybe some of the detachment comes from there? Like maybe there's not like resentment, like, oh my God, I can't believe he turned his back on us. But maybe like some, I don't know, like I look at him and I kind of wonder, like, I know he's not being held at gunpoint. Like, you got to show up out there or we're going to, you know, do something to you or whatever. But I kind of look at him and I wonder, like, is he happy to be here? Like, are things okay? Like, should I feel good about him being here? Or, you know, is this a thing where, you know, he's just going to show up for the wait out the remainder of his contract or do his job for the remainder of his contract? And the soonest opportunity he gets, he's just going to go to AEW where he can be happier or whatever. I don't know.
Yeah, no, I know what you're saying. Robert, it seems like he's putting in a good or earnest effort, but I don't think he's conveying to people who think he's talented and deserves a push that it's coming. You know, so this might be just putting in a good professional effort until the deal expires and he can go do something else. I could be wrong, and I could ask around and see if there's a sense of it, if he is actually kind of happy and that – you know, they've talked to him and he feels better about where he is. What do you think?
Yeah, it doesn't seem like anyone that goes public with the fact that they want out ever is there long term. They might not get released exactly when they want to be released.
Yeah.
But it's not like this happens and then things work out and the guy's an Intercontinental Champion or something in a few months. Like that doesn't seem to happen. I think more of the cases of like what had happened with Brody Lee and with the Revival are a lot more common in these situations. So that might be part of the non-investment by the side of the fans as well. So it could be a little bit of the tribalism as the caller described in that, well, if you don't want to be here, we kind of don't want you here. But it also, and I think we've seen recently that there's a lot of that the unabashed fan of a company, which I really didn't know existed until about a year and a half ago, to this level at least. Like,
yeah.
I thought people were wrestling fans. I didn't realize that weird Hulu commercial they ran a few years ago was actually true. With that said, I also think as I mentioned earlier, there's just a knowledge that he's not long for this world. This world being WWE, so there's not a great need to be invested in him, and I think that has played into some of the tepid response to him.
Robert, what else have you got for us? Or excuse me, William, what else have you got for us? Thanks, Robert.
I also wanted to talk about the that news TV segment with the Street Profits. I think the USO storyline with the tag team unification and whatnot is good. It's fine at the moment. I think it kind of hurts that I don't know if like Randy is legitimately hurt or whatever, but his absence, like and the thrown together Riddle and Shinsuke team kind of seems like a weird detour. So that's kind of my first question. What do you guys think about that? But also, kind of on a little bit of a separate note, like, I feel like you get the same issue with the tag team unification you get with the world title unification where, you know, there's only one and therefore less people, I guess, get, like, a chance to get spotlighted and go for it. So I feel like prior to the unification, the Street Profits were kind of in a bit of an arc, developing a bit of an edge. And I just feel like tonight they kind of reverted to that I don't know if you remember when they first came to the main roster, they were doing like this weird thing where they would like hype everything up for the upcoming pay-per-views or like everything that was happening on Raw. And they were just kind of like hype man, like backstage hype man. It was mm-hmm. kind of weird.
Yep.
They
yep.
kind of reverted
weird,
to
yeah.
that a little tonight. And they seem to just, they kind of revert to that obnoxious act that they used to be. And they lost some of that edge. I'm not getting the sense that they're going to be contenders in the near future, especially with Riddle and Shinsuke being the contenders for the time being.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of them being, Maddie in the house. You know, let's come out here and hype things up. And they should be out for themselves, not company pitchmen. I'm not a fan of that. I know, obviously Vince McMahon or whoever, Kevin Dunn, they get a kick out of them in that role, and they think it's more entertaining than the announcers running down the show. But, Robert, I think it's a bad look for a wrestler on a roster to seem like they're, pitch men. It feels deceptive or disingenuous, too. Like, well, we're just talking. It's like, no, you're participating in hyping an event as sort of messengers for the promoter, and I just don't think that's a good look for wrestlers. I mean, I guess there might be a wrestler who it worked for. I'm having trouble coming up with a scenario where I would think it was a good idea.
Yeah, I think we'd be okay with it more if it's just literally a commercial that they're presenting and say it's a, WWE shop thing or whatever. And that is one thing. But whenever it's this sort of native advertising that they kind of do within the show, I don't listen to much anymore, but Jericho would do that on his podcast where he'd have those awkward segues into whatever he was about to pitch based on what he's doing. And I think as annoying as that is, that works well in podcasting, in the podcasting medium, not so much in pro wrestling. With that said, I thought they were very entertaining tonight when they did it. I thought their timing and all that really, really, really worked. I do not, in general, though, want to see them go back to that style of character because I think that character was a fun entrance and people pop for it, but there really wasn't much to it. And as mentioned, it seemed like we were getting a little bit of a real tag team division over a couple of shows before the Orton injury, and we still may get that. But tonight was kind of discouraging in that direction.
Yeah. Yep. All right, William, anything else for us? Oh, I muted William. So let me actually unmute you, and then you can tell us. Anything else, William?
Oh, yeah, I didn't realize that. I was talking away. Yeah, the other part that I had mentioned, the Riddle and Shinsuke team up, I know this came up on SmackDown, but I'm interested to get your opinions on this. Kind of, I don't know, it just seems like a kind of a weird detour. Like, I know Randy may be dealing with some like real injuries or at least he's rehabbing a little, but just seems weird that I don't want to turn this into like why isn't Roman Reigns here segment because that comes up every weekend but yeah, it's just kind of weird that like they had Shinsuke all of a sudden has his eyes on the Usos and not really Roman and Riddle kind of was also kind of square, it was seeming like he was going to square up against Roman, but now all of a sudden it's against the Usos as well.
Robert, have they done a good enough job making it seem like this would be a logical alliance with both Boogs and Orton out, that Nakamura and Riddle are together and they figure we'll start with the Usos and then, maybe the implication is later one of us will go after, or both of us will go after Roman?
I think it's fine to say the logical leap that they would be that they would find an alliance with each other. There was kind of a mini, really half-hearted feud going on with Roman and Shinsuke before the Roman deactivation came to be, and obviously the big feud, one of the bigger feuds in the company, was Riddle and Orton against the Usos. So I don't think it's illogical to say that would be the teammate situation with Orton on the fence. With that said, it's going to be hard to keep the gravitas that you had building for this tag team feud, or you had even if it was technically blown off a little while ago with Shinsuke, just because, and that's not necessarily a knock on Shinsuke, although it is a little bit because of how de-emphasized he has been over the years, but because of the equity they had with Randy and Riddle, it's really hard to replicate that. So I think it's going to be a bit of an uphill climb, although I can see the logic in having them slot Shinsuke into that role.
Nakamura did not get the Randy Orton pop when they built to the hot tag and Riddle leaped and tagged him. But I think people like Nakamura. You know, he's been a bit of a non-factor for a while, so you got to rebuild him a bit. But I think their match is going to be good. People are going to look at Riddle and Nakamura and long for people who enjoyed it, long for the banter and the chemistry between Orton and Riddle. And I haven't seen that yet with Shinsuke and Riddle. Riddle sort of said what he's going to say. Nakamura says what he's going to say. So maybe they can work on that chemistry, and it'll grow. But if not, it might not be a long-term thing, and it's just to kind of bridge us to you know, what you mentioned, William, which is a one-on-one match for each of them in different contexts this summer.
Yeah, and do you guys think they're going to because I feel like we already got the one-on-one match, well, not one-on-one match, but, you know, the normal tag team match that we probably would have gotten at Hell in a Cell tonight. Do you think they'll add a stipulation? I know we're all kind of against, you know, them adding Hell in a Cell stipulations for the heck of it just because the pay-per-view's name happens to be Hell in a Cell. But if, you know, aside from Cody and Seth, these seems like the only other match that could fit that stipulation. So do you think that they'll make that happen on Friday?
What do you think, Robert?
I think it's a fairly strong possibility, although I would lean against them not doing that. If they only have one Hell in a Cell match, I think that's a better use of the monthly pay-per-view gimmick being, you know, Hell in a Cell because it's on the calendar. That's fine. The feud kind of fits it. It wouldn't put it past me, though, just because WWE tends to have the tendency to, like, you know, almost it may be like a good faith thing where you're overselling what you're doing and over-delivering what you're doing, but it kind of devalues what you're watching. And obviously this version of the feud wouldn't be worth that. I think if it is put in the cell, that's a clear signal that this match was supposed to be in the cell originally, and they're just kind of going on with plans as normal. But I actually don't expect it, although I see the logic in it and see them. I could see them something that they would very likely to do, although I don't think it's going to happen.
I'm fine with one Hell in a Cell match. I you know, just it is the match that fits as a third match and the nature of the feud. And I think it would take away from Cody and Seth to have another Hell in a Cell on the same show. But, you know, WWE obviously isn't scared to do that. You know, they've done it with Money in the Bank. They've done it with Royal Rumble. They've done it with Hell in a Cell. So I wouldn't be shocked. Robert, anything else for us? God, I did it again. Sorry. William, anything else for us?
No worries. My other topic, are you guys looking forward to the 24/7 division now that we've got some new faces in there with T-Bar and Austin Cruz, I think?
Apollo Cruz?
Apollo Cruz, yes.
In my mind, Apollo has been in it for a long time, but he probably hasn't been, but it just feels like it. I guess maybe this is a sign if he's out there, maybe he's done with the other gimmick. I don't know. The T-Bar inclusion was a little bit disappointing because I was sort of thinking, and I mean, there was no indications of it, but that the Judgment Day faction would be maybe a good place for him to land and they could get a little more out of him. And now it just seems like once you're in 24/7, you can't really be like a surprise addition in that way. What do you think, Robert?
When you see Apollo there, you kind of, that's a signal of whatever plans they did kind of have going for him, you know, about a year ago, that is completely now dead. When you see that, the 24/7 inclusion, even if guys get themselves over in the 24/7 division, they still are kind of 24/7 guys. I did appreciate the segment on one level tonight in that it was sort of an actual match that took place in pursuit of the title, where there was a little bit of wrestling moves, because I'm so annoyed with the fact that the roll-ups are just magical if you hold the 24/7 title. Like, anyone can be beat with a roll-up. So I did appreciate this. And as you talked about, I think, on a podcast a couple weeks ago, Wade, there is some sort of charm to the 24/7 universe really being its own universe, completely almost separate from the rest of the show. The only problem is that is once another character gets sucked into that universe, it's either they are absolutely prelim nothing or on the next round of releases. So it's always dicey when you're associated with that belt.
William, back to you. Anything else?
Yeah, one final segment I want to talk about was the Alexa Bliss Dewdrop match. I thought it was kind of disappointingly short, just in what it you know, the message that it sent out about Doudrop's placement in the women's division, how, if she, you know, she's kind of expendable, she doesn't really matter that much. I think I called in, I don't know, it's probably about a month now ago when they did that segment, where, that backstage segment where Doudrop approached Nikki and she was like, are you ready to get serious? And I don't know if it's because of the whole Naomi Sasha thing that they probably had to put that whole thing on hold, or maybe even worse, they never really had much plan for it, and they just kind of dropped it.
Yeah.
But I don't know. Yeah, kind of disappointed there. I thought they were going somewhere with them. They could probably still go in some direction when they make that tournament happen, whenever that happens. But, yeah, I think that's all I had.
All right, cool. Yeah, I was, to me, Doudrop is talented enough, and they had hinted that maybe there'd be some changes with Nikki and Doudrop, and now they're just there to, you know, have short TV matches that aren't really a feud. And somebody on Twitter asked what we think of what they're doing with Alexa Bliss. So I guess your thoughts on Doudrop and Alexa from the Doudrop perspective, but also what's going on with Alexa Bliss?
Well, with Alexa, it seems like they're sort of in a holding pattern with her, where they don't really have her next feud, but they still, you know, flag her as a level of importance. So they'll, you know, they'll give her a clean win on television, which I think is fine if you don't have anything directly. Then maybe you should have brought it up to TV. Again, there's been a lot of people on the women's side of things in the last month, so it's kind of hard to judge anything full on. From that perspective, as far as the Nikki and Doudrop stuff goes, yeah, you're right. It looked like, okay, this is going to get that stupid mask off of Nikki, or at least it could be, you know, a charming, maybe Randy and Riddle type of tag team. I wasn't really thinking that would happen, but that it was a potential outcome of this. This just seems like they're just two wrestlers that are together. There's not really a change in either one of their presentation. I know Doudrop is a slightly different character than she was, like, with the Eva Marie era, but there's nothing that really sticks out to you of this is a clear direction. They just kind of seem like prelim women's wrestlers, and that's all this is going to be at this point.
All right. Let's keep rolling through calls here. And speaking of the women's division, maybe Kyle from Baltimore has something to say about that. We'll see. Kyle, welcome to the show. Good to hear from you. What do you think of Raw tonight? What stood out?
So what I really want to get into was the start of the show with Becky and Bianca and Asuka. I think I feel like I just feel like Hell in a Cell in general has been thrown together of how these matches kind of been thrown together, because it's been overshadowed with the whole Sasha Naomi stuff. That's kind of like been the focus point, and then Hell in a Cell took the back burner. So it kind of felt like this show is like, I will forget that it's actually on Sunday. But anyway, so with this feud though, it has been since Becky came back, it's been about Becky and Asuka. Bianca has been a complete afterthought. She gets great reactions. That's all well and good. But she has been so cold. This is the first time she actually cut a promo about how she feels about being in this match. And it's just, and, you know, having Becky standing tall, it's just, I don't know, that's, it makes me feel like that, in one respect, I kind of want Becky to win, because I feel like it's really about her. She's like, but since they do something like this, it usually means that person's going to lose and Bianca may retain. So I guess my main point is that what is going to be next for Bianca if she's just been a complete afterthought of this entire feud? How is this going to last with her run when Becky's really the vocal point and she's the she is the bigger star compared to Bianca as of with her being there longer. So what do you think about that entire segment?
Robert, go ahead. What do you think?
Yeah, I just think it's kind of what you mentioned. It's a little bit of a mess because of the Sasha Naomi situation. Clearly, they had a set of plans, and they're kind of adjusting on the fly. And I agree with you. Yeah, this feud is Asuka and Becky, and Bianca is kind of a bystander. With that said, you're headed to the dreaded triple threat, Wade, your favorite. So I don't really see a good outcome in that either. Like, there's no real good finishes to even work there. because I still think, although she's a very over champion, you're still in the building of Bianca face. And so you need to make credible challengers for her to face and for her to take down. And she's just sort of sandwiched in the middle of this Asuka Becky feud, which I think is a decent feud. Like, I like the fact that Becky is like one of the few characters without general amnesia that remembers what she did 2 years ago and can implicate the thing. Asuka, I don't think, other than her kind of aura of being Asuka, is really contributing much to it. They have her cutting those wacky promos. And again, as you said, Bianca came out and just addressed the fact that she's kind of not involved in this. So I give them a little bit of a pass because it was a bit of a curveball they were thrown. But I still think this probably speaks to the lack of depth, that they couldn't pivot in another direction very, very quickly within this division. So it's again, just some of the growing pains that we talk often about the women's division on Raw.
Yeah. I mean, it just felt like straightforward, but not particularly memorable. You know, Belair said, "You're complaining too much, and I'm going to do my talking in the ring." And then she just started talking to both of them. Like, don't say you're not going to talk and you're going to do your talking in the ring and then go on to talk to both your opponents. It's just like the scripting was wrong unless she just sort of mixed the lines up. You know, I was expecting Mark Henry to pop on the screen and say, "That's enough talking. Let's go fight." So I don't know. I mean, to me, it was fine in the sense that I thought Becky early was really good. You know, when I went off to create life like the god I am, I generously gave Asuka the greatest gift of her career. I handed her my title. And I mean, there's just a spring in her step and this bravado. So
coffee and spite, I think, was the line, right?
So here's the quote. "Lucky for me, I don't live." So she goes, "Many of you prayed for my downfall. Luckily for me, I don't live for you. I live for me. And I live on spite and coffee. And right now I'm feeling pretty fueled up." I mean, that's great stuff. And we're not getting this in the same way from a babyface Becky Lynch. So I am enjoying this aspect of it, but like by the end, it kind of reminded us what the backstory is with Asuka and Becky, and I'm fine with that. It was straightforward, and that's good. But Belair was sort of forgettable, and I agree that you'd want this to be more about Bianca. You know, she's the champ, and she did sort of feel a bit like a third wheel here. And then, you know, you've got the dynamic of two baby faces. You know, Asuka and Belair dancing to Belair's music as the segment ends, and Becky's standing at ringside. It's like Becky's the one going in as the underdog with the odds against her Sunday, and they already have a headwind of getting fans to boo Becky, and now it looks like, you know, even with a little miscommunication that they seem to get over pretty quick, Belair and Asuka are going to be almost 2-on-1 on Becky.
That's a good point, Wade, real quickly, in that, like, who, if it is a somewhat of a hostile crowd, I know that kind of goes counter to what we opened the show with, who the heck is going to get booed in that match? And I think that'd be really interesting
by the way,
to follow.
To
see where everyone at,
also,
where everyone's at.
I also want to mention Kid also in Chicago, and Chicago has been like a hot crowd that they always get hype about whatever. So that's also going to be probably a part of it, of how the crowd's going to react to that match in particular. Just I don't know, but the entire show, but at least for that match, being in Chicago, who knows how people will react to that match in particular of who they wanted to cheer for. So that's another aspect of it too, to think about.
Kyle, what else for us?
For me, when it comes to the Cody Rhodes, Seth Rollins, Hell in a Cell match, I am just so, I've said this before, I think, and I hear other people on other podcasts talk about Cody Rhodes, that he's been all hype about his entrance, and WWE's making him act like he's some type of top star, like he's been a top star since he was there, but he wasn't. He never has been, and I still look at him like he is a mid-carder. I still look at him. I cannot envision this guy as WWE champion. And I guess my other thing is next week, are they going to make some type of an announcement about the championship with Roman Reigns? Why he's not on this show? I kind of mentioned on Friday that Roman Reigns has not really an actor, but he's just been doing nothing. And you know, he'd be a top star all he wants to, but he's not on the show and never appearing on Raw. What's the point of him having both championships? So I guess two questions there. With Cody Rhodes, why is him being super extreme with his entrance and Seth being who needs to win on Sunday badly, but because he's been a loser. And with Roman Reigns not being there, what's going to be next for all three people in this situation where they want to keep Cody Rhodes as the top star, but Roman Reigns isn't there? What are you going to do with that? So what do you think about that situation?
Robert, I'll throw to you first on that one. I mean, it is weird not having Roman there, and it's weird having a blow-off match where it's not real obvious where they go next with Cody and Seth, or if you think you know where they're going next, how they get there.
Yeah, there's a lot to be sussed out there. I think in general it has been weird. We were able to sort of accept it when Brock Lesnar was champion that the title would just kind of disappear for a while because that was kind of the whole Brock Lesnar package is that he's part time and whatnot, and that was established for several years before he ever got the title. So there was a bit of conditioning to that. So it's been weird that they unified the titles and we lost championship storylines. Like that has been jarring. In some senses, I think Cody has actually benefited from that because then he has been kind of like the de facto top guy on Raw.
Imagine Raw without Cody right now.
No, it would be a mess. Yeah, no, it really would be. I think you know, him, Riddle, and Orton really have had kind of carried the show for a while since WrestleMania and the championships disappeared. On the Cody side, I think I don't know where his next feud is going because I think eventually the roads will lead to Roman Reigns, but we're not there yet. And it's, again, as what you just said, Wade, think of what Raw would be. It's kind of hard to figure out where he could go next, what they have in store for him. Because of what William mentioned, they've been so careful with his character in that way and presenting him as the top star. It kind of feels like who is there for him to feud with?
Are they going to just end up in Money in the Bank against each other? Like, is that Seth's great revenge or the point he's going to make if both of them end up in the Money in the Bank match? I mean, Cody's a spokesman in the commercial.
Yeah, well, because the pay-per-view seems to be built around Cody, and you know, even the arena was built around Cody. If you look at it this weekend with the box truck going around and all the promotion he's done for that, and I kind of slipped my mind as I was going on my little rant there. I think he's probably winning Money in the Bank, or at least he's positioned to win Money in the Bank. So that's probably
that's
exactly
not the same as a personal issue, you know. And I think
that's where
your mindset is, you know, what is that next personal issue? I mean, is Cody going to go out there for a month and go, people aren't going to believe when I tell you this, but, and then what? Like, I've always dreamed of Money in the Bank before it was a match, or, you know, like, I mean, like, it's my favorite match and I watched it, and you'll make references to past Money in the Bank winners and cash-ins and like just sort of become Mr. Money in the Bank, and that he just is a big fan of the concept, and that's going to be what he talks about. Because otherwise, I mean, it's just going to be, you know, a bunch of wrestlers sort of thrown in.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe they, you know, plant seeds for a couple other personal issues with Cody that'll give him something specific to talk about. But they need Cody cutting promos to continue to forge that bond with fans and fill TV time and build up issues in the match.
Right, and I think we've seen over the years with Cody here and at AEW, he's at his best when he's in that kind of one-on-one feud. And that's where the Cody thing really works, because there are certain deficiencies that he has that a guy like maybe even a Seth Rollins doesn't have, where Seth can just go out and have matches with guys every week and it will work out. I don't think that's the way to go with Cody. And again, they've been so hyper focused with Cody. I don't know if that would be the germ of a seed of a feud that they would have to plant there. But that is a bit of a dicey situation, I think, that we sort of talked ourselves into as we examined it a little closer.
Yeah. All right, Kyle, anything else?
Yeah, I want to get to the six-person tag match where they just added for Hell in a Cell with the Judgment Day and Rhea, Liv and all them. I think, I guess, I kind of like this feud, and I kind of been loving Balor and Styles and Liv as a team. It's been really cool that they actually have done something with all three of them before it has a storyline for them doing something interesting, somewhat, you know, at least for them anyways, it is doing something for them in not having them in random matches and then just because they're actually in a real storyline here. And I like all six people. I think that's the problem. Like, I'm a fan of all six people, but with the whole Judgment Day stuff, it is very goth-like, and like, it's like, they're just, not really do anything, not all that interesting. And it just, and again, this is another, well, obviously, kind of random, but not random of in terms of them just adding this match to Hell in a Cell just because, but they have been feuded for a while. But what do you think the end goal is with this Judgment Day thing? Is it going to go, is it leading to a Liv and, I mean, Rhea and Bianca feud? I mentioned last week saying that I tried to get a vision what that will look like, because I don't know what they plan on doing if they end up having, say, Becky and Bianca for Money in the Bank one-on-one match, and then a Rhea Bianca feud at SummerSlam. Or what do you think will that? Where do you think that will that their group is going with?
Yeah, Robert, and I'll augment the question a little bit this way too. Just what's your take on how they built Judgment Day and how you know, Corey Graves talked tonight about Rhea Ripley might have needed. What she might have been missing all along is the ability to sit under the learning tree of Edge. And is this a way to elevate Rhea Ripley and also round out whatever was missing with Damian Priest and give a sense of purpose to this new faction? And do you want to see it expanded? And do you have any ideas of who that might be?
Yeah, I've done thinking about who it's going to expand to, because I put mental energy in and I never come out with a good result. I think the plan has been all along to elevate, you know, you keep Edge on TV without necessarily having to have him in a singles wrestling role all the time, and you elevate the other two, kind of, you know, sputtering, but you have big, you have sort of plans for single stars in Rhea and Priest. So I think that is what the goal is here. Like, with that said, we've talked about it a lot that we just kind of don't like this. Like, it's generally not very good. This week, ironically enough, I think Edge not being there added to it. I think it was better because Edge wasn't there. We didn't get those ridiculous promos and all that stuff. So it was just kind of the match. And it is like, you know, there's people that are all really, really good at what they do, doing what they do. I do think Rhea is not going to be damaged by this, even if this is not a great faction. I do think it is something that is going to be beneficial for her. I think she will be the ultimate victor out of all of this. When that happens and results in a title match, I'm sure it will, because everyone kind of gets a turn in the women's division, so it wouldn't necessarily be tied to this. But I think on balance, it's probably a good thing for Rhea, even if it's not a good thing on the show as a whole. I don't even know if I answered your question there, Wade, but I think I covered most of the big points.
Yeah, no, I think you did. And I don't really have a feel for, you know, Kyle, your specific question of what's next. I think we're just at the beginning of the sort of faction warfare. I think Balor and Styles together might be just for this, or maybe they stick together for a while and move on to challenge the Usos or something like that. I don't have a feel for that.
Yeah, I just watch Rhea and seeing her and Liv, I'll just keep envisioning. I'm just looking ahead, seeing what will that look like with her feud with someone else, or because the only baby faces that's on Raw who are in the women's division is Liv, Bianca, Asuka. I can't even think of anyone else in that level. So I think that's also the problem too. You know, they're talking about having a women's tag team tournament to crown new women's tag team champions, but there's no tag teams. There's really less women who are seen as top stars. So what are you going to do with that? That has been the last thing I'll leave you with, is that, you know, talk about this having less women and women that they're focusing on a Raw. They talk about some tournament with less women they don't really care about, a championship they don't care about. So what do you think about that? I'll leave with that, but thanks for my call.
I think so. Robert, yeah, anything you want to respond to there?
Yeah, I think it's just the general problem we've been talking about a while of the lack of death. And I think we're noticing, too, that as much as the tag division was kind of annoying, when it doesn't exist, you realize that that's all they had the women doing who weren't in the title picture. Like, your whole thing in the women's division is you were in a tag team and then you feud with your tag team partner. That was basically every women's storyline for like 2 years, and now they kind of have to reassess that, you know?
Yep. All right. Anyway, we'll move on here and go to Ryan in Cumberland to probably wrap up our caller section here before a couple emails, and then we'll be done. Ryan, thanks for calling. I assume you got three topics we have not covered yet that you'd like to bring up.
My first question is on Alexa Bliss. It seems like the storyline is since she's recovered from her mental health issues with her shrink that she's gone quite the winning streak. So do you think it's going to be Becky Lynch that's the one that beats her, or is it going to be someone else, you think?
I just don't know if I see her being moved to that level, but I also, you know, as we just talked about, there's not a ton of options. They're not, you know, building up, you know, anybody else, obviously, so they could do it. Robert, how do you feel about Bliss being at a level of challenging Becky? I mean, I think fans would be on board. I just don't know if Vince is comfortable with that, especially just given that we don't really know what's going on with Bliss and what her character is. So I just need to see more before I can endorse it or even think that's what they have in mind.
Yeah, it's hard to make a sweeping judgment at it right now. I do think she gets into a title program, but I think kind of piggybacking off what we talked about with the last caller, a match with Becky feels bigger than a title match, or at least, you know, it's sort of on the level of a program with Becky and a program with having a title match. And I think Vince has always saw a lot in her, even if he hasn't always used her in the best way. So I think there will be a bit of a push to the top. But we talked about it last time I was on. She is the poster child of if you had depth, you would need like a TBS title. Like, she would be perfect in that sort of role because she fits in that sort of middle zone. I don't know if they have long-term plans for her, but I definitely think they are going to elevate her up the card unless something kind of wild happens in the interim.
All right. Ryan, what's number two for you?
The question on Austin Theory. They say he's the youngest WWE United States champion. Is he the youngest United States champion, period, like from the NWA going? Because I can't think of anyone that's younger. Are they just trying to, like, not give them any prestige, the NWA? Or is there someone else that's younger?
Good question. I'm not sure if they're including the entire history of that belt or just talking WWE proper. And off the top of my head, I don't know if there has been anyone younger, but I wouldn't be super down on WWE if they were only talking about the U.S. title reigns under the WWE banner. As I talk, I'm trying to think if, trying to think if Barry Windham held it and he was younger or something like that. I don't know. Robert, do you
I've got a slight answer thanks to our friend of Wikipedia.
Yeah, good. Yeah.
Well, it's a Flair. It's David Flair. It's the youngest champion ever.
Interesting.
Yep. So there's a whole plethora of reasons why that, one, it's David Flair. It's Flair's not exactly the best terms of the company right now, all that stuff. But yeah, in the great 2000s era of WCW, David Flair did hold the title.
Okay.
So he's the youngest ever, according to Wikipedia.
There you go, Ryan.
He's the youngest ever. I could have seen that been someone like an NWA champ that was super young. I know that the title had more prestige back then, but I also feel like there could have been like a Von Erich type. I know they weren't in the NWA, but that type of figure being really young and holding the title. But yeah, David Flair, how about that?
Cool. Go ahead, Ryan.
And my final question is on this Kevin Owens, Elias storyline. Is your acquaintance Brian Alvarez responsible for this storyline? Because he used to have a brother, Bradley, that used to call into his show, and he, like, threw a conniption every time. He says, "That's Ryan that called." A lot of people informed me that maybe they stole that storyline, because I'd often made the top 50 moments a couple times throughout the years on that show. So I'm just wondering if someone from WWE could listen to that compilation show.
I have no idea. I have no idea. Robert, to you?
No, but and I don't know what Alvarez's take on this is, but the way that Alvarez breaks down wrestling, if he knows he's responsible for that silly segment, I would love to hear his reaction in audio form. That would be – I'd pay Patreon money to hear that.
There you go. All right. Thank you, Ryan. Appreciate it, as always.
Okay, thanks for taking the call.
Yep. I always count on Ryan for off-the-beaten-path topics. I don't always have a good answer because he's so just off the beaten path on some of his questions. Anyway, let's go to a couple emails here. JB in Detroit says, do you think with Randy Orton seemingly out for a period of time that Riddle is best served to continue to pursue the undisputed tag team titles with Nakamura? In storyline, I get that it makes sense that both tag wrestlers' partners are taken out by the bloodline, but I cannot but feel as if Riddle's momentum would have been better maintained going directly after Roman. He was white hot after his promo last Monday night, and I can't help but feel that it's been a little tempered with the decision to pursue the tag team titles. As always, love the show and go VIP. I mean, yes, it is a momentum stopper, but you've got, you're going to put Riddle against Reigns at Hell in a Cell and have it be secondary to Cody, Seth, and other things, or are you know, and rush into that? Are you going to put it in like on a Money in the Bank show where everyone's thinking about the Money in the Bank match? I think you can save it to SummerSlam if you want, if, assuming they want to do it there, and it's not ideal for momentum wise, but I think he can get it. I think Riddle can get it back. What do you think, Robert?
Yeah, I don't really know the value in feuding with just Roman right now, because Roman's not necessarily a prominent figure. That sounds funny to say because of how much he's been pushed, but at this exact moment, there's not a ton of value in it. And I think WWE has shown in the past that they will just find people to fill in the roles that were previously, you know, the things were previously slotted for. So I don't know if there's been a lot of change. I think back to 2014 when John Cena just came in to do the Daniel Bryan bit at SummerSlam, and then John Cena did Roman Reigns' role at Survivor Series in that same year. So I think they can do that, and it wouldn't necessarily be that big of a change if there's any tempering from it. Part of it is, yes, the combination with Orton obviously helped him, but also this kind of just might have been what their plans were all along. So I would not rule that out at all.
All right. I guess that's all JB had. So we'll go to Zach B., who says, I think someone on the writing team has been spending too much time watching Batman the Animated Series. The majority of heels on this roster, from Seth Rollins to Becky Lynch to all of Edge's stable, feel like escapees from Arkham Asylum. If MJF were to come in, they'd have him dressed up like the Penguin in 3 weeks. Oh, God. We should not suggest that out loud. Would it be too much to have one heel be a real person? Robert, are WWE heels on Raw I hesitate to say caricature, but along the lines of what Zach is saying, where it seems like they're, you know, cartoon movie villains. I mean, I guess I don't think Theory fits. The Usos don't fit that. But Heck Omos, I guess, doesn't fit that. So I guess there's some who aren't. But the ones who are getting a lot of TV time and a lot of talking, I can see where Zach is coming from.
No, absolutely. I think that's been a problem in WWE for a while, is that they don't have these kind of nuanced heels. Like I will say, like you said, Theory, like that's a guy that character, I know a lot of guys like that I kind of can't stand. So it kind of works on that level. I don't know a lot of people like Damian Priest. I wish I did, but I really don't. So there is kind of those extremes, and I think that's where a guy like an MJF works so well in the lane he's in, because yes, he has a bit of a gimmick, but his gimmick is that he's a piece of you know what. Like that is what the kind of gimmick is. He's very hateable, and I think because they don't really develop these guys as personalities, instead they develop them as characters. That's kind of the rut that we're so often in this company. And it becomes the template of, you know, you're a heel and you do these things now and you have these extremes and you know, you're forward and you do this and you do that. So I think it's a general problem, although it's not completely universal, as you pointed out, but it is a big problem. It's a reason why the Roman Reigns stuff works often, because it's often very human between him and the antagonist. And again, it just doesn't work like that in most scenarios.
Yeah. Yep. All right, Robert, anything else you want to bring up from Raw that we didn't cover yet?
No, I'll comment that I thought it was a boring Raw in a good way, in that, like, the 3 hours seemed to go by quickly. Like, nothing spectacular happened, but this wasn't a Raw where it was just, like, nonsense after nonsense, other than I don't want to douse on the Memorial Day celebration, but that was so long in between the match. Like, that, they do that every week now, but that really stood out, and that wasn't even the main event. That was just something that kind of really just stuck with me.
It's never as good of a Raw as it could be when Chad Gable doesn't get to talk.
Very true.
Yeah. So I would, I mean, I you don't want to overexpose him, but come up with some good stuff. good stuff for him. I enjoy his work, and I feel kind of bad about Tommaso Ciampa. I don't think the way he's been portrayed. You know, we talked about T-Bar. I don't think he's a top candidate either to end up. I don't know. I guess the idea of Edge's promos about recruiting people is, you know, you've lost your way. You don't have focus. You're not succeeding. You know, a little bit of a Dark Order recruit video from AEW. We can turn things around. So in a sense, you know, I don't want to backtrack or like retract what I said earlier, but maybe T-Bar being in the 24/7 division and Ciampa sort of just being a body out there as a, you know, to be a bridge for Ali in theory, actually can work towards them getting renewed and rejuvenated in the Judgment Day.
That's some real optimism there, Wade. Very proud of you.
Well, let's end on that then. Thank you, Robert. Appreciate it. Check out his show, search PW Torch, and you can find the latest episode of MMA Talk for Pro Wrestling Fans on that podcast feed, along with a lot of other good shows. Robert, as always, a pleasure talking raw with you.
Thank you, Wade. Also, if I can really quickly plug the PW Torch YouTube channel, which I've had a few contributions on. I got a little thing I'm kind of still a work in progress called Rob's Retake, where I generally look at the hyperbolic discourse online and kind of play referee with that. Go check that out on YouTube. Check out all the other great content on there, the fireside chats that Zach Hadorn and Tyler Sage have, shooting the breeze that Zach had earlier on, and some really good interviews. So go check out the YouTube stuff. I'm not just available in audio. You can also see my wonderful face.
I'm so glad you plugged that. Check it out, the PW Torch YouTube channel, everybody. All right, until next time, which here on the post-show feed, we have some best-of shows always mixed in, but the next live one will be after Dynamite, so we'll hope you join us for that. Thank you, everybody.